Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, March 31st. I'm Ray Graff. It's been a while since we've done a sports program, and we'll do that today. Lots going on in the world of sports. The Final Four is set for women's and men's college hoops. While that's happening, the Supreme Court is hearing arguments about how Division I colleges can reward college athletes. Major League Baseball gets underway tomorrow, and there will be fans in the stands. The NFL season is going to 17 games, and the commish wants full stadiums. All that and much more to talk about. And with us today, Howard Herman and Amy Bass. If you want to talk sports, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Sports on the way. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk sports today with Amy Bass at Howard Herman. Amy is a professor of sports studies and chair of the Division of Social Science and Communication at Manhattanville College. Bass is the author of One Goal, A Coach, A Team, and The Game That Brought a Divided Town Together, among other titles. In 2012, she won an Emmy for her work with NBC Olympic Sports on the London Olympic Games. Howard Herman has been on the Berkshire Eagles sports staff for more than three decades. He's the sports department's regular columnist. In addition to being a sports writer, he's also a member of the New England Baseball and New England Basketball Hall of Fame and a member of the U.S. Basketball Writers Association. If you want to talk sports today, two people who know what they're talking about are in the house, or at least on the line. 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Howard Herman, it's been a while. How are you, sir?
Ray, it is great to hear your voice on the as if we're talking to each other, not just like in my car. But let me just say before we do anything else that it is an honor for me to be sharing this with Amy, whose parents are Berkshire Eagle legends.
Really? Okay, well, we'll get to that in a moment, and we'll introduce Amy in a second. I just wanted to say it's been a strange year, and having you back to talk sports with Major League Baseball about to begin sort of makes things feel normal. We'll see if I feel the same way at the end of the show. Amy Bass, welcome to the program. Your first time on the show. How are you?
Thanks so much for having me. It's lovely to be here with you, Ray, and also with Howard, who I think at one point covered me as a bad high school skier long ago.
Absolutely. It gets to be fun these days because now I'm covering, you know, the second generation of kids.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm getting ready to start covering maybe in one or two cases at some point. Somewhere very soon will be a third generation.
Wow.
Amazing.
He really is old, Amy. It's incredible.
Now, that's the only reason I brought it up.
Well done. You saved me the work. You know, as a professor of sports studies, and before we get down to so much sports stuff that's happening this week, I thought about this, that this has been the craziest year on so many levels. There will be so many college courses and classes taught about this. As a professor of sports studies, how will you start putting this past year in perspective?
You know, we already have. At Manhattanville over the summer, we actually created a course, a multi-faculty, multidisciplinary online course to welcome our incoming class that was about COVID. And I gave the keynote for that class, and it was about sports. So thinking about how America's real wake-up call to COVID and its impact was when the NBA shut down. So thinking about, you know, thinking about sport as such an important stakeholder in society is already in the classroom. It's already what we're talking about. And it's also part of, you know, no one is understanding this as well as students are, and student athletes are part of that population. So I think all of those things, we're already talking about it, because the absence of sport has been as interesting as sport itself.
It has been very painful. I think there were so many times at the height of this pandemic and the lockdown where at home I said, you know, I could probably psychologically handle this if there was a game on and there was nothing to watch except old poker shows from, you know, 2018. There's a lot going on now. It's not quite normal yet. So covering this from a professorial standpoint isn't necessarily your perspective will change. This is still going on.
Of course. course. We're creating context for this all the time. I mean, the role of sport in the college classroom, from where I sit, is how we make meaning out of sport, you know, how we use it as a window to understand so much of what's going on. So, you know, whether we're talking about the role of sport, you know, last spring and well into the summer in terms of the increasing Black Lives Matter movement, the election in November, the runoff election in Georgia, you know, all of these things, people say, you know, stick to sports. But when you stick to sports, including in a moment of pandemic and political upheaval, you're learning a lot about the world.
So true. Our number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Amy Bass is here from Manhattanville College. Howard Herman from the Berkshire Eagle. Howard, I follow you on Twitter, and it seems almost by the day slightly more joyous to see you covering school sports.
It has been a long time in coming. We first started covering, you know, it was nice to actually cover a live sporting event in person, because in the fall, while we didn't have a lot of sports going on, and all winter, the college teams I cover, I've been doing this strictly remotely. So it's on my computer screen, it's on my television, it's pre- and post-game Zoom calls. So it has been, it's been a real pleasure to get back into a gym and see kids, even though they're all wearing masks, and the games aren't quite the same because of some of the rules have changed because of COVID. Nice to, you know, and it's really been, the best part of this all is to see student athletes, coaches, administrators, parents doing their best to follow the rules. Because while you've seen in a lot of places, and I know there have been a lot of Division I schools that have had to shut down at times because of COVID positive tests, there haven't been any problems in the high schools around here. And I don't know, from what I've read, it doesn't sound like there have been any real problems in your area over in Albany either with positive tests. So to see the kids and their parents and the coaches all behaving responsibly has been perhaps the thing that has warmed my heart the most.
I think that's an interesting angle. And Amy, at your college, the sporting programs are ramping up again?
You know, they are to a degree. I think that there's some catching up to do to try to give, fall sports were pretty shut down, but the athletes were working out and you know, building team and what have you. So there's some slots for some tournaments for some of the fall sports to come together this spring. But the testing protocols are very strict. It's always about squash the outbreak. And colleges are a little bit different because we're in a residential situation. But I think that, you know, seeing students, what it means for students to put the effort into making it work has been one of the most enlightening things, you know, even for me personally, not just, you know, from a scholarly perspective, but as someone who is sort of in the trenches on campus beside them, it really takes a village. And they are learning, you know, teamwork as a campus community in ways that we only have this pandemic to create. And I think that that's a huge testament to them. And I think that that's in concert with some of the things that maybe aren't as good. You know, we had Kim Mulkey the other night after Baylor lost to UConn, you know, saying no more testing, that she couldn't, you know, no more positive tests. And so we have, you know, the bad role models. And then I think, as Howard said, we have the kids on the ground who are really working hard.
You mentioned UConn, and you know what? We're going to take a break here, but the Final Four is set for both the men and the women, and it's great to see, even if the houses aren't quite full and the noise level isn't what it was, it is fantastic to see this. Let's break that down in a moment. It's Sports Today. Amy Bass, Howard Herman are here, and your calls are welcome. 800-348-2551 is the number. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC Sports Today. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. Amy Bass is here, and Howard Herman here to take your questions. And one email. I'll throw it to Howard. I'll see if you have the answer to this. I can't figure this out. You might be a little older than me. Maybe you can. This is not exactly sports, but it's more memorabilia. Greg writes, I have a baseball signed by a whole team. Two notable signatures are Sandy Koufax and Jim Palmer. Any idea what team? It's got to be an all-star team, right?
Would have to be an all-star team because they never, A, they were never teammates, and B, they never played in the same league.
Yeah, so it couldn't even be an all-star team.
It would only be maybe, you know, like at a show that they were at the same place and they signed the ball.
Okay, or maybe Greg just, you know, his eyesight needs checking. The Final Four is set. Stanford and South Carolina have joined UConn and Arizona in the NCAA Women's Final Four. UConn seems to be there every year. Amy Bass, they're up against U of A this year. Any chance U of A has a shot at this one?
No. I mean, I'm a huge UConn fan. You know, my role in life is to critique the NCAA within an inch of its life,
yeah.
And I do that regularly. But the UConn dynasty and you know, a team that sort of transcends the second citizen status that women's basketball has in terms of March Madness. I mean, we don't even call the women's tournament March Madness. It's not branded. The NCAA doesn't even brand it on the court. But something like UConn, I think, transcends that. And when you look at a dynasty, you look at something like UConn, you look at something like the U.S. women's national team in soccer, these are game changers, and these are chipping away at that glass ceiling for women's sports. So I'm UConn 100% all the way.
You know, Howard, I don't know if we've seen the Yankees dynasties, we've seen the Patriots dynasties. I'm not sure any of them, well, they might be equal, but that UConn dynasty, it rolls, man. It continues to go.
It does. It's been a couple of years since they've been in the championship game, and yeah, they piggybacked on the original success of the Tennessee dynasty of the late Pat Summitt. And that game the other night should not have been an Elite Eight game. That game should have been a Final Four game or a national championship game. The three truly dominant women's teams in America right now are UConn, Baylor, and South Carolina. And while other teams are catching up and have, you know, you look at Louisville, you look at, you know, some of the, you know, UCLA has gotten very good in women's basketball. It's really the three of them that are, at least in my opinion, are the flag carriers for the women's game.
Let's delve into that in a moment. Let's grab a call in the meantime. And I also want to talk about the Supreme Court looking into the compensation of Division I athletes. And I'm sure Amy and Howard will have something to say about that. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Jim is in Albany. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, Ray, great program.
Thank you.
Tara Vandeveer is from Schenectady. She has won more college women's basketball games than any other coach who ever lived. So your panelist there, who just did not mention Stanford, he needs to be corrected. But any comments from him?
Howard.
It has been a while since Stanford has been in that rarefied air. She has certainly won more games. She is a Hall of Famer, there is no doubt. She's also the first coach to have been a 1 seed to lose to a 16 seed in the NCAA tournament.
And I wanted to know what they did last night, but they were not on the radio. How'd they do?
They're in, and it's going to be
So thank you, Howard. They're not on the radio then, but they're in the Final Four. Okay, let's go to another question. How come the Congress is investigating the NCAA for the way they treat the women at the NCAA tournament? What is going on there?
All right, Amy Bass, I'll let you handle that one.
Well, I think, you know, this we just saw the power of social media, right? This started on TikTok to show the inequities in terms of what's going on with these two tournaments. So you actually had players who have a lot to risk when they put these things on the table as Division I athletes, as athletes with scholarships, showing the discrepancies between the weight rooms, the food choices. Again, I mentioned the branding on the court. It's two different tournaments. If you Google right now, you know, Final Four, who made it? There's a beautiful graphic that will come up that will show you the men's Final Four, and you have to specifically put the word women in there to see it. So, you know, it's
wow.
Important in that one of the things that we talk about in terms of women's sports versus men's sports and just the lack of support, the lack of platform, is this inequity? But with the NCAA tournament, we're talking about students. And so this is a Title IX issue, right? This is an equity issue. This is federal law. So when we're thinking about inequities, you know, we can look at the U.S. women's national team and their lawsuit against U.S. soccer. We can talk about, you know, the Women's World Cup being, you know, taking place on turf versus the men who get real grass. But this is students. And so when we're now looking at college, yes, we have something to investigate, and this really gets at the heart of the matter of how we make sports compatible with the educational mission of institutions of higher education.
And Mark Emmert has been backpedaling so quickly on this, it's like he's a cornerback on a Super Bowl team.
Yeah, you want me to be controversial? We can't get this done with him at the helm. It's just
no
just
argument
can't.
On
we
that.
Can't he move, is... We cannot move forward with him at the helm.
Well, Jim, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's Sports Today with Howard Herman and Amy Bass. And while that is going on, the Supreme Court seems ready to give college athletes a win in a dispute with the NCAA over rules limiting education-related compensation for athletes. And we've talked about that before on this program. That outcome will help determine how athletes are compensated, whether schools can offer tens of thousands of dollars in education benefits for things like postgraduate scholarships and tutoring, vocational school payments. Under current NCAA rules, students cannot be paid, and the scholarship money that colleges can offer is capped at the cost of attending the school. The NCAA says the rules are necessary to preserve the amateur nature of college sports. The cynics among them, and many sports writers fall into that category, say, hey, these are pro athletes already at the elite level. Amy Bass.
Yeah, I mean, this lawsuit worries me in a couple ways, because first of all, it doesn't take down the behemoth, right, that is the NCAA. It's the colleges that are going to have to absorb this. So the NCAA doesn't really, you know, get marked on this. The other part of it is that, you know, these kinds of cases, along with name, likeness, and image, they feel like wins. And if they feel like wins, I worry that we'll feel like it's done. And it's not done, right? This is such a complicated piece in terms of understanding, you know, never mind the time that student athletes are putting in, but then we look at the money. And the money is so hyper-focused right now. We know, because of the cancellation of the 2020 tournament, that was a $600 million loss to the NCAA. So until we figure that part out, the coaching salaries, the television rights salaries, the NCAA as just this power broker in the United States, I think that we're just sort of chipping away at the little parts. And
well, what would you recommend?
We need to do bigger. I think we need to break the whole thing down and rebuild it. And I think that, you know, you start by making sure that a basketball coach or a football coach isn't getting paid more than a college president or the governor of the state that they're coaching in. There's a lot that can happen. I mean, what if the NCAA tournament was suddenly a public access television thing, right?
Okay, but
what if PBS was broadcasting March Madness?
Okay, with all due respect, Amy Bass, you won an Emmy for NBC Sports. A lot of money comes from the networks to these sports.
Yeah,
you're in favor of tearing that down.
Well, if we're looking for equity, it really depends what our goal is here. So we can either professionalize the college sports and not call them amateur sports anymore, or we need to break it down and rebuild it. So I think that those are the two things in front of us. But I think cases like Alston and what have you are just Band-Aids right now.
Howard Herman, you have been covering sports a long time. And what is your position on college athletes' endorsements and images and compensation, et cetera?
I have no problem with any athlete who can monetize his or her image to help them out. Where I'm having a problem with this writ large is that the caste system that somewhat exists. We're talking about a handful of schools that are, you know, the big money schools. I worry that if this all blows up, what happens to the Siennas, who obviously don't have the same amount of money? Is there no longer, you know, is there now a fourth division? Do we now do four divisions, have a superpower division, and then the schools like Albany and the University of Vermont playing in their own tournament. I don't know what the answer is. What I do know is that what goes on now isn't right. What I do know is that any athlete should be allowed to make money off the sale of his or her jersey in the student bookstore, should be able to sign autographs for pay. None of that bothers me. None of that in the least. I do think, you know, when they talk about, you know, the kids not being paid, the amount, the percentage of student athletes who play college basketball, for example, who go on to play professionally, is very, very small. And that's the other side of the coin.
Except I'm going to argue with you there a little bit, Howard, because I think that we have to make sure that we're defining professionally correctly. If we're talking NBA, yes. But if we're talking about the various kinds of professional leagues, including Europe, that number goes way up.
Does it go way up, or does it just go up a little? Because I know in most
Europe... No, it goes up a lot. It goes up a lot.
Because in most European leagues, they only allow one or two Americans per team. So you're still talking about 370 Division I schools, 20 players on a team average. The percentage of that is pretty small who are playing professionally anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern becomes what happens to the schools where everybody jokes about that NCAA commercial, the majority of our student athletes turn professional in something other than their sport.
Right.
And it is a funny commercial when you think about it. But the majority of players who are playing basketball at Holy Cross, Boston University, are not going over to Europe to play. They're playing basketball, and then they're moving on with their lives.
All right, Amy, I'll give you the last word on this.
Though, I mean, we're looking at about a third.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones here very quickly, and then we'll jump on the email. It's Sports Today. Howard Herman and Amy Bass clearly at loggerheads here, and it might come to blows. Thankfully, they're in distant locations. Let's go to the phones. Bob in Claremont. Bob, you're up. Hello.
Oh, hi, Ray.
How you doing?
Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Love the show. Just I had a point to make on that that baseball card from Jim Palmer and Sandy Koufax.
Yeah.
There's a distinct possibility. I would look for other names on that ball, possibly from the Dodgers or the Orioles, because those two teams played in the 1966 World Series.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Both Sandy Koufax and Jim Palmer pitched in that World Series. So
that's a great point.
I would look for some Orioles and some Dodgers.
Very good point. And, Bob, thank you for that. When this email came in, I read this one. Let's see. This is the one I want. This is from Mark. Mark says, I think it's been great that we've been able to enjoy exciting NCAA tournaments on both the men's and women's sides, but considering the fact that some schools have had to cancel their seasons and others have had to lose players due to positive COVID tests, don't you think that no matter who wins, this year should go down in the history books as an asterisk year? Amy Bass.
I mean, there's always things that can create an asterisk, right? So, I think that you play within the moment that you're in, and what counts counts. I mean, you know, early in the tournament, we saw a team advance because of a COVID situation, and barely anyone blinked about it. So I think that, you know, you play with the situation that you're in. You can put an asterisk next to a home run record if someone tests positive, but, you know, you could put an asterisk next to Babe Ruth's records, too, because he wasn't hitting against the best pitchers because of the Negro League. So, you know, there's always something that you can claim about any given moment, and I think you just have to know that in 2021, this is where we're at, and this is who made it out of the tournament on top.
Howard, agree or disagree?
Absolutely. It's what happened. Some teams played 12 games. Some teams played 20 games. You saw in Albany last weekend, Boston College made a quick one-game trip to in the NCAA hockey tournament because the team they were supposed to play in the first round had positive COVID tests and could not play. It's what happened this year. Next year, there may be something else on the court. You know, The best player in the country may hurt his knee and not play in the tournament. So do you asterisk that? There's always a reason to asterisk something, but it's just that year.
And you make a point. I mean, during World War II, how many players went and served and weren't there? Some of the great ones, Ted Williams and many others, were not around in the major leagues. The leagues went on. So you make a great point. It's sports today. Howard Herman and Amy Bass join us. And I understand, Amy, that you're a big Red Sox fan, and I'm not going to hold that against you. But we'll talk about baseball here. Howard, now you are not a Red Sox fan, right?
I'm Switzerland here. I'm as neutral as it comes, and I happen to believe in my heart of hearts that with a break or two, the Red Sox could be the surprise team in baseball.
Well, I think that's just plain ridiculous, Amy Bass.
You know, they've broken my heart at this part to such a severe degree that I will confess I was watching the Dodgers last year far more than I was watching the Red Sox because they felt like my people. You know, it's hard. I actually just did a piece for WAMC and talked about the current state of baseball and how we are a cult of personality instead of a cult of team. And this happened looking at the loss of Mookie Betts through my daughter's eyes because he was her first great love. So I'm dismayed right now with baseball, and I'm trying to get it back in. If Howard's right and the Red Sox are this dark horse for making a run at things, but right now my heart's still a little broken.
You know, Amy, I love that commentary, and it's available on our website, WAMC.org, and it's a really beautiful thing. Now, when I was a kid, I mean, I've been a Mets fan since day one, so maybe the first Mets game I went to was 1970 when I was a little kid, and so I mean, there were a lot of bad years when I was in middle school and high school. The Mets, they were pretty bad. And, you know, there have been years since they've been very bad. But you stick with your team. And the day that Tom Seaver was traded was one of those days that just knifed you in the heart. And I feel your pain about Mookie Betts leaving the Red Sox. When the game starts tomorrow, when Gerrit Cole throws that first pitch tomorrow, there will be 11,000 people in the stands at Yankee Stadium. This, to me, Howard Herman, you know, it ain't perfect, but it's a step toward normalcy. Let's see how this experiment goes.
It is absolutely a step towards getting to a more normal atmosphere. I believe the Texas Rangers have been allowed to sell every seat in their stadium.
Yeah, it's true.
But that's Texas. I think in Massachusetts it's 12% of capacity.
12% at Fenway.
12%,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course tomorrow it's going to rain most of the day in Boston, so maybe it won't even matter. But as long as you know, it's been entertaining watching the NCAA tournaments and seeing hockey games with some fans back in, you can see, even just through the television, you can feel the change than from what it was in the NBA bubble in the fall, from what it had been at the start of the NHL season with no fans, what has gone on in the NCAA with no fans in buildings. And in fact, the team I cover on a regular basis in college basketball didn't even allow media in for the course of their entire season. So yeah, we did everything, you know, via remote. But you can feel, even watching on television, you can feel that there's more juice in the, you know, at a game, you know, because you can actually hear people.
And not fake sounds. Amy Bass, agree?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think, you know, with the complete lack of federal response last year to COVID, we basically saw baseball and basketball do the work of public health in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't get our schools back together, but we could get, you know, a patch together baseball season. We had the NBA and the WNBA function in some capacity. We had bubbles and wobbles. We had, you know, women's soccer doing kind of inventing the bubble, really. So I think that, you know, they've laid the groundwork in ways that few other public institutions have. They had the resources to do it. Their pockets are deep, and they had the the central organizing bodies that gave them the power to do it. So now it's sort of take two. And they're so far ahead. You know, we're still sort of looking at the return of kids to school as this, you know, product of magical thinking. And we have, you know, professional baseball going back in for round two. So I'm intrigued. I want to see how it unfolds. I think baseball had a terribly rocky start last year, you know, with the Marlins and sort of the testing positive debacles. I think we learned a lot from that. I think it's a shame that we had to go to sports to learn these things. But now let's see what they've learned and hopefully the rest of society can model.
You know, we'll take a break here, but Amy Bass mentioned magical thinking. Commissioner of Football wants full stadiums coming up. Let's talk about that in a moment and anything else you want to. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's sports today. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Amy Bass is a professor of sports studies and the chair of the Division of Social Science and Communication at Manhattanville College. Howard Herman is with the Berkshire Eagle. He's been writing sports since Joe Louis was in the ring. It's always great to have Howard on the program as well. And our number here is 800-348-2551. Before we get to the NFL, let's grab a couple of calls here. And Jerry in Sharon, Connecticut. Jerry, you're on.
Hey, Ray. I'm of a belief that the third game of the 1951 playoffs, National League playoffs, between the Dodgers and the Giants is the greatest game in Major League history. That's the Bobby Thompson game. I would like to hear your experts reflect on what they think is the greatest game in history.
All right, we'll do that first. Amy Bass, what do you think?
Oh, my goodness. We can't ponder that for a moment?
Well, sure you can. How about Game
sure,
6 of the 86 World
Series? You know
what? Series?
I'm pretty much going to go with any time men or women USA v. Canada happens on the ice.
Okay. Well,
I think it's one of the most thrilling global rivalries. Granted, they're our neighbor, but I think that the U.S.-Canada hockey rivalry is my favorite rivalry in sports.
I think that that's a great answer, and you're probably not old enough to remember the Russia-Canada-U.S. hockey rivalry in the 70s and culminating with a miracle on ice, but there was, I mean, those guys were all, they should have been. I guess the Russians were technically pros, but the Canadians and the Americans were also like pros. I mean, the level of hockey, Howard Herman, was amazing.
Well, we're talking about two different things because there were a series of professional tournaments involving NHL players from the United States, NHL players from Canada, and NHL players from Russia, and the Russian national team. I can still remember seeing Ed Van Impe of the Philadelphia Flyers trying to skewer a Russian with his stick in a Canada game against Russia. I mean, obviously, you know, the Miracle on Ice game.
Yeah.
Is first among equals.
You know,
when Mike Ruzioni scored that goal. Now that was the ultimate college kids against professional athletes, the Russians versus the United States. But since the caller was discussing baseball, I go back to still the only Game 7 walk-off home run in World Series history, the 1960 World Series between the Pirates and the Yankees.
And since Amy is a Red Sox fan, and Howard, you're agnostic, I suppose, although I'm not sure about that, the Carlton Fisk home run in 75, I mean, that was really something to see. Do you remember?
I do. And Dick Stockton, who called that for NBC that day, just retired from his long 50-year broadcasting career. And it was a great call. It was a great home run. But when I look at plays like that, you know, there were still more to play. There were still more games to go.
Yeah, you make a point. Yeah, I see.
That's why the Bill Mazeroski home run in the 60 World Series is still the greatest single, you know, World Series moment, because it's the only World Series that had ever been won in a Game 7 in the bottom of the ninth inning on a home run.
Yep. They didn't call it walk-off back then either. Let's go to Peter in Wappingers Falls. Peter.
Yeah, hi, Ray. Hey. Just a brief comment. Can you hear me okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I'm just a little ticked off about the media coverage of women's sports. Particularly, I am because I've been following the women's the tournament, the basketball tournament, and it is incredible. UConn and Stanford and South Carolina and all Arizona, all of that stuff. And I looked in. I get the LA Times delivered to me electronically today. There was one article about Stanford and nothing about anybody else. I picked up a Daily News, a New York Daily News yesterday that usually has good sports coverage, and there was absolutely nothing about women's basketball, about the NAACP tournament. I think it's revolting. Bad journalism and bad sportsmanship.
Well, let's start with the journalism. Howard, agree or disagree?
I completely agree. There are some of us who don't have the space to have more coverage right now, because we are also in the middle of our high school seasons, and those for our paper are the most important, both male and female. But if you are a major newspaper and you don't have front page coverage of both NCAA tournaments, you are missing the boat.
Amy Bass.
Really?
I mean, I think you have to go to the root. I'm going to return us to the NCAA and the attention that they give and the way they build their platforms. It's great that the inequities between the weight rooms and the logos and the floors have gotten so much attention, and the players did that themselves. But, these inequalities have been hiding in plain sight for years, and the media representation of it is exactly that. It's the media representation of that. So when we look at the budgets behind these tournaments, when we look at the way the NCAA brands them, even the logos are different. And if you want to, if you want to get to the very root of it, the fact that we have the tournament and the women's tournament, right? We have the World Cup and we have the Women's World Cup. I mean, Howard, I'm not sure if it's still this way, but when I was at Taconic High School, there were the Braves and there were the Lady Braves, which is one of the, dumbest things I've ever heard, Lady Braves. The way we make men's sports normal and women's sports extra, that bleeds all the way into the media coverage. And so I think it's we can't single out just the media. I agree with you 100%, but we have to get to the roots of these problems. And when we're talking again about college basketball, we're talking about Title IX, and that's a big problem.
Just for the record, we do not refer to anybody as Lady anything. And in fact, your alma mater, we don't even refer to them as Braves anymore because they've dropped that nickname.
Correct, and think about that.
I know there's one of our high school teams actually has Lady nickname on the back, stenciled on the back of their basketball jerseys. We do not refer to them as that. They are strictly, the only team that I will refer to in as far as their sex is at the University of Massachusetts, because you have the Minute Men and you have the Minute Women.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, the Berkshire Eagle will call Gaga Lady Gaga still, right? He's not.
But
answering.
They seem like small things, right? But NBA, WNBA, PGA, LPGA. It's this stuff matters.
But what would you propose to call it?
Well, just have the organizing group and have different categories within it. I mean, even those categories, right? We're seeing some dissension in terms of what happens with people who don't fit into either category, and that's probably for a different show.
Yeah, not with 8 minutes left. I don't think we can do that. Yeah.
But it's when we attach this sort of, this is extra, this is added, then we're prioritizing men's sports.
But the quality of basketball, I haven't followed professional basketball in some years because I'm a Knicks fan, but college basketball is much more pure. And I think that when you see UConn play, you are seeing the purest, the most real basketball, the team game that it's supposed to be. Am I wrong?
I would argue that that's very true. The women's game, and we can talk about that, right? We can talk about the women's game, the women's side. The women's game is a different game in terms of ball movement, in terms of passing, in terms of power, in terms of strategy and intricacy. 100%. It's why I like watching women's tennis more than I like watching men's tennis, because men's tennis has become so much about the serve that I find watching women's tennis is just a more interesting spectacle.
Howard Herman is here. Amy Bass at Sports Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike is in Glens Falls. Hello, Mike.
Hi there. Thank you very much. I wanted to go back to the announcers, and you had talked about Dick Stockton's call on the Carlton Fisk home run. I'm thinking of my guy, Vin Scully from the Dodgers, who had a number of dynamic calls in World Series games and regular season games. I keep thinking of the Kirk Gibson home run in the World Series Oakland, the ground ball that Mookie Wilson hit that went through Buckner's legs, and the way that Scully's voice went from normal to hyper in one small role. And he was also on the call of the catch, the Montana to Dwight Clark catch, in the NFL playoffs, 49ers versus Cowboys. So I just fell in love with Vince Scully, and that's part of the reason I'm a Dodger fan.
I mean, one of the greatest of all time. I don't know how you can rate these guys when they hit that level, but Howard Herman, I mean, what do you think?
I think there's no doubt that Vin Scully is probably, if not the best broadcaster, certainly one of the top five of all time. I need to put in a plug for a couple of women who got non-traditional jobs doing other sports. Lisa Byington, who worked the NCAAs for CBS, was stellar, was maybe the third best announcer of the 12 they have. And Leah Hextall, who broadcast the 6 overtime North Dakota Minnesota Duluth game in the NCAA hockey tournament, just off the chart. And you were starting to see more and more women very slowly trickling into those type of jobs. Melanie Newman is the voice of the Baltimore Orioles, and you are starting to see some of that, and I think that can only be good as we move ahead.
Amy.
Yeah, I'm kind of traumatized at this point because all I can hear is Vin Scully on a loop saying, "Gets through Buckner." So it's...
It was a fine moment, although the game was already tied by then.
Just sort of leveled me.
Well, I don't know. I mean... That game was tied. The Mets were not going to lose that game then. And if you want to argue about that series, we certainly can. But Buckner took a very bad rap by the fans of the Red Sox. And
Buckner lost Game 6. Buckner had nothing to do with Game 7. Get that through your mind.
One of the things that Scully did in that game, though, if my memory serves, and it was a long time ago now, was he made the call, and then he shut up. And
he didn't say it. That's what I mean. It was gets through Buckner. Bam.
And then you just heard the crowd, and it was just this electric moment. Costas will do that on occasion, too. And it takes great discipline for a broadcaster to shut up, as I well know. Let's go to Jan in Warwick. Jan, turn the radio down, all right? Jan, okay. Jan has violated the prime directive. Lori in Connecticut. Lori, you're on. Hello? This is great. A call-in show and one person has the radio at level 10 like a Ted Nugent concert, and then there's another person who's in Connecticut who's not there. Hello, Lori, are you there? Okay, Lori's not there. Zach, the engineer's having an aneurysm. That's great. The NFL is increasing the regular season to 17 games and reducing the preseason to 3 games. Team owners approved the 17-game season this week. It's the first time since, I think, 1978 they've expanded the season. I remember when the games there were 14 in the season. Seemed fine then. 16 was fine. Howard Herman, I assume 17 will be fine as well.
17, it is. It's going to be what it is. I would much prefer to see an even number of games than an odd number of games.
Why?
I think 18 games and no preseason games would be better for sports fans. But you know, it's an opportunity for the NFL to monetize itself even more than it does. The NFL is the behemoth of professional sports in America, and it can do whatever the heck it wants.
Amy Bass.
Oh, I'm a bad person to ask about the NFL.
Really?
17 games to me is just seven, you know, just more opportunity for injury. I'm not a fan of football. I'm very vocal about that. I would love to see it eradicated from the planet.
Oh, my gosh.
It's interesting because when you look at folks like Goodell and what have you saying, oh, you know, but it's the same really because of preseason. We know those preseason games aren't the same. So I think when we think about the wear and tear of football on human beings, 17 games has me worried.
All right, let's go now to the elusive Lori in Connecticut. Lori, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You have 2 minutes. Go.
Okay, that's all I really need.
All right.
I'm just calling because I am a UConn girl fan.
Okay.
The women are amazing when they play. The energy that is in their arena is amazing. And it's so disappointing to me that, you know, outside of the Connecticut area, nobody cares or nobody seems to pay attention. And I don't get it.
Is that changing, though? I think UConn is pretty much a house. I think everyone knows, or I don't know if everyone knows, but a lot of people across the country know that the UConn women's team is a dynasty that is for the ages.
I think the growth in women's sports, especially in basketball, in the last decade has been dramatic. I can remember when you could go to a women's basketball game and there may be like 400 people, you know, in the stands. Now you go to any of the big schools. UConn sells out all of its game. Tennessee comes close to selling out all of its games. Stanford gets large crowds. South Carolina gets, you know, the big schools are as much a moneymaker as their much more longstanding male counterpart.
Is that true, Amy?
Yeah, I mean, women's basketball is not only the NCAA's fastest growing sport, and women's softball is right there with it, but it's pretty high up in the chart. It's the fourth biggest moneymaker in the NCAA, you know, more than baseball, all of those. So you look at that, and then you pair that with the increased visibility of something like the WNBA, which is just the shining light of American sports right now, I think.
Sure, sure.
I think that. You know, change is slow, and we want, you know, we're impatient with it. But I think women's basketball and women's softball are two very exciting things to watch in terms of visibility, in terms of gameplay, and in terms of where these paths might lead.
We only have about 45 seconds, but Amy, why is the WNBA the shining light of American sports right now?
I think that they're exciting. They are, you know, they have a social justice program. They just flipped the U.S. Senate, so they're powerful. They bought out their owner that they didn't like. If you look at the Atlanta Dream, Kelly Loeffler, Renee Montgomery, I think they're just fascinating, exciting, and we need to give them as much due as athletes as we are right now as power brokers in you know, society and politics. So I think that it's a pretty amazing thing to watch.
Well, Amy Bass, thank you so much for being here, and I hope you come back again soon. And once again, your commentaries are really good. We enjoy them very much.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Howard Herman, what are you covering next, buddy?
Well, what I'm covering next is, I believe I'm on girls volleyball.
All right. When's that? Today? You better get going.
Tomorrow. Yeah. No, tomorrow. Today I have to go into the office. I actually go into the office so I can social distance and not see anyone because I have to put our section together tonight.
Is your office like Oscar Madison's in any way?
No, but my office is really empty these days because we've all been working at home for a year and a half.
Well, that sounds enticing. We've had a full house here, and frankly, I could use some solitary time. Hey, thank you both for being here. Support comes from Adele Shafridi Studio and Gallery, a jewelry store in Rhinebeck, featuring in-house designed and handcrafted fine jewelry with an emphasis on bridal and studio-made jewelry, Shafridi.com. And Interim Healthcare, thanking their caregivers working to help people remain safe in their homes, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Once again, thanks to Amy Bass and Howard Herman for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for emailing. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, who only had one aneurysm today. Thanks to Amber Sickles, who screened the calls, our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, all right, everybody, it's been a couple of months. Go find the T-square, find the hammer, find the fine-tooth back saw that you do on the crown molding. It's Home Improvement with Darren Tracy tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.